This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents Spec Ops, Book 2 of Expeditionary Force, written by Craig Allenson, performed by R.C. Bray. Chapter 1. The Flying Dutchman shuddered again with sounds of groaning and the terrifying shriek of metal composites being torn apart. The displays on the bridge flickered, and the air was filled with alarm bells and klaxons from almost every system. "Skippy, get us out of—" The ship shook violently again. "Direct hit on number 4 reactor," Skippy announced calmly. "Reactor has lost containment. I am preparing it for ejection. Ejection system is offline. Pilot, portside thrusters, full emergency thrust on my mark."
"Ready,"
Desai acknowledged in as calm a voice as she could manage. "Mark, go!" Skippy shouted. Whatever they were doing, it was more than the ship's already stressed artificial gravity and inertial compensation systems could handle. Normally, ship maneuvers were not felt at all by the crew. This time, I lurched in the command chair and had to hang on as the ship was flung to the right. There was a shudder, actually a wave of ripples traveling along the ship's spine, accompanied by a deep harmonic groaning. No ship should ever make a sound like that. "Ah, damn it. Reactor 4 is away. It impacted Reactor 2 on the way out, shutting down 2 now." Skippy's voice had a touch of strain to it. "Missiles inbound, diverting all remaining power to jump drive capacitors. Hang on. This is going to be close." The main display indicated the jump drive was at 38% charge. Skippy had told us that with the Dutchman trapped inside the Theranan Destroyer Squadron's damping field, we needed a 42% charge for even a short jump, and that still carried a severe risk of rupturing the drive. If that happened, then we would never know it. We'd simply be dead between one picosecond and another. The missile symbols on the display, 7 of them, were coming in fast. 2 of the symbols disappeared as I watched, destroyed by our ship's point defense maser beams. The other 5 missiles continued toward us, fast, fuzzing our sensors with their stealth fields and weaving as they bored in. 1 more missile destroyed, 4 still moving fast. Jump drive at 40%. Too close. I turned the knob to release the plastic cover over the self-destruct button and turned to look through the glass wall into the CIC compartment. "Colonel Chang." He nodded, and I saw him flip back the cover to the other self-destruct button, the confirmation. "Sir." He looked me straight in the eye and saluted. I returned the salute. "Colonel Chang, we have been down a long, strange road together. It's been an honor serving with you." My left thumb hovered over the self-destruct button. The ship was dying anyway. This was my fault. How the hell had I gotten us into this mess? I'd better start at the beginning. My name is Joe Bishop. I'm a sergeant, temporarily holding the theater rank of colonel in the United States Army. Neither rank matters much at the moment, since I'm aboard a stolen alien starship over 1,000 light-years from Earth. Believe it or not, the United Nations Expeditionary Force has put me in command of our ship, a Theranan star carrier we unwisely named the Flying Dutchman. I have, I think, good common sense, and everyone else would agree, a history of getting into trouble. Big trouble. And a history of getting out of trouble. If you ask me, I've been in the right places at the wrong times. My critics would say that I am one lucky son of a bitch. My mother is not a bitch, but other than that, they may have a point. Skippy, our ancient alien-talking beer can combination mascot and artificial superintelligence, says there is no such thing as luck, that humans believe in luck because our dumb monkey-level linear thinking has no idea how the universe works. Whatever. When the Flying Dutchman went outbound through the wormhole near Earth, and Skippy shut down the wormhole behind us, I have to admit a tiny, tiny part of me was disappointed that the ship didn't immediately explode into a bazillion pieces. One of our cargo holds has a 12 tactical nukes from the American inventory. We only need nuke 1 to vaporize the ship and erase all trace that humans were roaming the galaxy, but somebody had a coupon, or they were cheaper by the dozen at Nukes R Us or something, so we had 11 extra. No, they aren't available as last-minute birthday gifts, thanks for asking. When Skippy confirmed the wormhole had been shut down behind us, deactivated it this time, not merely temporarily disrupted its connection to the network or whatever, a tiny part of me hoped that UNEF had somehow snuck behind Skippy's back and set a nuke to explode right then. You ever been on a cliff or the balcony of a really tall building and you look over the edge with butterflies in your stomach and you're afraid of falling, but a tiny part of you wants to jump? A tiny part of you that you're afraid you won't be able to control wants to jump. You're afraid of being near the edge because you think you might not be able to control yourself, that you might feel compelled to jump. I read somewhere that it's because part of your brain can't stand the tension and wants the tension to just go away, even if the solution kills you. No? Never had that happen to you? Hey, I'm afraid of heights. That's why I never signed up for Army parachute training. Flying in a Black Hawk helo with the door open hadn't bothered me much. As long as I could hear the engines howling above my head, I figured we'd be all right. Being on my parents' house roof, stringing Christmas lights, now that kind of thing scared the hell out of me. Scared me enough that every February I had argued with my mother against taking the lights down. Why go through the trouble of taking them down? I asked. Sure, most of the year our neighbors would grumble that the Bishop family were lazy procrastinators, but by October, maybe November, we'd begin to look like proactive geniuses, right? And my mother never fell for that argument. The Christmas lights were always down by Super Bowl weekend. In this case, it wasn't heights I was afraid of. My fear was of the unknown, of being responsible for all the people aboard the ship, and if one of my screw-ups meant our enemies discovered humans had stolen a Theranan star carrier, of me being responsible for the destruction of humanity. If the Dutchman had exploded beyond my control, I wouldn't have to be concerned about my inevitable screw-ups. UNEF hadn't set a nuke to explode. Or they did, and Skippy, of course, discovered their plan and stopped it. It would have been easier for everyone if the Dutchman had become a rapidly expanding sphere of subatomic particles. Either way, we were still alive, and I had to continue the mission as planned. Dawn. If the Dutchman had exploded, it would have killed 70 people. Our new, not-so-merry band of pirates was 58 military personnel and a dozen civilian scientists. This time, we were semi-officially a merry band of pirates. Everyone had on their uniform the Paramecium with eye patch logo that Skippy designed for us. Even the scientists were given a patch on their official mission jackets. So far, I hadn't seen many of the scientists wearing those jackets, and I wasn't going to make an issue of it. Scientists, civilians, didn't worry me. What did concern me is that this time, the military units assigned to the Dutchman were from Spec Ops units, elite special forces troops and hotshot pilots. By the way, when I left Earth the first time, I'd been current on military slang, at least U.S. military slang, but apparently I was the only one who didn't know people on Earth were pronouncing the United Nations Expeditionary Force UNEF. And this is before we even left. This whole time I've been wasting precious light years spelling it out, UNEF. Skippy probably had a minor beer can meltdown. Although in my defense, Skippy in his absent-minded way dropped the ball plenty of times his absent-minded self. So where was I? Right, UNEF. After we left, governments had wanted to emphasize the glorious contributions of their own armed forces to fighting the horrible Ruha, so they'd stopped mentioning the UN part of UNEF and just called us the Expeditionary Force, or X4. The name X4 sounded cool and it stuck. A bit later, when people and their governments began to regret the alliance with the Kristang, the governments in UNEF tried to emphasize again the United Nations part, as if the governments that were part of UNEF had no responsibility for what had happened. By that time, it was too late. X4 had stuck in the public's mind. The mission was technically under the command of the United Nations Expeditionary Force Special Operations Command Directorate. Yeah, that's a mouthful to say. And in reality, I was in command all by myself, because as soon as the Dutchman jumped away from Earth orbit, we were on our own. If things went well, UNEF SOCOM would take credit. If things went sideways, they would heap the blame on me. That's the way it works. When Special Operations Command assigned our crew, I first called the new merry band of pirates SOCOM. Then I quickly learned all the cool kids used the term Spec Ops. Although when I, a soldier who had never been in a special operations unit, tried to be a cool kid by saying Spec Ops, I got some weird looks. I was learning. Let me explain about Spec Ops, or Special Forces Troops. My knowledge comes from observing, and certainly not from experience. Whether they are U.S. Navy SEALs, U.S. Army Rangers, British SAS, or in any other military service on Earth, Spec Ops soldiers are all badasses and they know it. Getting into Special Forces units requires incredible commitment to meet tough physical standards and, much more importantly, mental toughness. You know those guys or girls in high school, or even before that, who already knew exactly what they wanted to do in life? And they were completely focused, in great physical shape, getting up at 5 a.m. for swimming or hockey practice or running or lifting weights before school. They got good grades, studied hard, never slacked off. The adults always liked them. They were great athletes, intense even in practices. Most importantly, they were serious. Serious about life, even as young teenagers, at a time when most of us were drifting along or flailing through life, having no idea what we wanted. Those guys and girls? They are where Spec Ops troops come from. They're better than most of us, certainly better than me. I am a reasonably dedicated soldier, proud to wear the uniform. No way could I qualify for Special Forces. The physical stuff I could train myself up to do, I'm pretty sure. The difference is, I would never want to train that hard. I don't have the internal discipline or the drive to work that hard. I simply don't have enough desire to do it. I greatly admire the people who do make that level of commitment, and I'm glad I don't have to. Special Forces are the best of the best, and the Dutchmen got the best people from Special Operations Commands of the Five Nations in UNEF. I couldn't imagine the competition that had gone on for slots aboard the Dutchman. The only thing I was sure of is that I would never have qualified. Our new merry band of pirates completely intimidated me. They were tougher than me, smarter than me, more dedicated, more driven, better soldiers and human beings in almost every way I could think of. And I was in command of these superhumans. Me. I wasn't worthy. They knew it. I knew it. Part of being officially in command of an actual UNEF mission, instead of being the do-it-yourself leader of a pirate ship, was the mountains of official paperwork, even if paper had been replaced by iPads. I hated it. I had never been good at dealing with boring details. "Joe," Skippy said to me while I was in my office the day after we left the wormhole behind, trying to deal with the tedious administrative details of being a commander, "I have a question for you. Technically, a complaint." I write it on a piece of paper and put it in the suggestion box. "We have a suggestion box?" he asked, sounding genuinely surprised. "Yep, it's in the closest black hole. Just drop it in and wait." "Oh, very funny, Joey. That black hole will get you the same result as a suggestion box, so all right, I get the message. Anyway, I was looking at the crew roster database on your iPad." "Oh, man, don't remind me. Please, I've got enough of this damned administrivia to deal with already." "This is an easy one, Joe. I notice there's no entry for me in the crew roster. I'm not even listed as a passenger, and I'm clearly crucial to the proper operation of the ship. I should be listed as part of the crew." "I'm sorry, Skippy, I didn't know you cared." Damn, a super powerful alien AI was sensitive about the oddest things. He hated it when he was considered differently than any other sentient being aboard the ship. "You're right. That's my fault. I'll input your data right now." "Oh, and I see you've already helpfully pulled up the input screen on my iPad for me. Did you save the report I spent the last 20 minutes writing?" "Like humanity needs to read that mindless drivel. I'd be doing monkey kind of favor by erasing that crap." "Sure, it's, saved. And it better be. I already forgot what the hell I wrote in that report. First item in the crew roster is given name, so I'll input Skippy. Second item is surname, The Magnificent." "Really? It is entirely appropriate, Joe." "Oh, uh-huh. Because that's what everyone calls you," I retorted sarcastically, rolling my eyes. Not wanting to argue with him, I typed in The Magnificent. "Next question is your rank. This file is designed for military personnel. I'd like Grand Exalted Field Marshal El Supremo." "Right, I'll type in Cub Scout. Next question." "Hey, you jerk." "Is occupational specialty." "Oh, clearly that should be Lord God Controller of all things." "I'll give you that one. That is spelled A-S-S-H-O-L-E. Next." "Hey, you shithead. I should..." "Age?" I asked. "Well, a couple million at least, I think. Mentally, you're a 6-year-old, so that's what I typed in." "Joe, I just changed your rank in the personnel file to Big Poopy Head." Skippy laughed. 5-year-old. You're a 5-year-old. I guess that's fair," he admitted. Sex? I'm going to select NA on that one for you, I said. Joe, in your personnel file, I just updated sex to unlikely. This is not going well, Skippy. You started it. Oh, that was mature. 4-year-old, then. Maybe terrible twos. I give up, Skippy snorted. Save the damned files and we'll call it even, okay? No problem. We should do this more often, huh? Oh, shut up. I thought that was the end of it, until 5 minutes later when Sergeant Adams called me. Sir, I'm looking at the crew training roster, and Skippy is now listed as asshole first class? Ah, damn it. I hadn't thought anyone would look at the stupid roster. I'll change the darn thing. No need, sir. It certainly describes him. Adams laughed. Yeah, that it does. Also, the required training schedule under your name now lists potty training. I thought you should know. Also, it says you need to learn about the birds and the bees. Ah, crap. Skippy and I had a talk a few minutes ago. It looks like I need another one. You think that's going to change anything? She asked skeptically. Not really. It wasn't only me. Every one of the original merry band of pirates was intimidated by our new all-star crew. The second night after we left the now-deactivated wormhole behind, I'd gone into the galley at 4 a.m., unable to sleep, wanting a cup of coffee and some human company. Before getting dressed, I checked my iPad for the uniform of the day posted by Colonel Chang as the ship's executive officer. Most days we wore camis, and on Mondays we would be wearing dress uniforms to dinner. Today was the standard summer service uniform, or whatever each country's military had as the equivalent. When I got to the galley, to my surprise, I found Lieutenant Colonel Chang, Major Sims, Captain Giraud, and Captain Desai sitting at a table, bleary-eyed and drinking coffee. After I poured a cup for myself, Sergeant Adams walked in and I handed a cup to her. There we were, the six of us, alone in the galley, the six members of the original merry band of pirates who were still aboard the ship. We'd been through so much together, so much we hadn't expected to survive, that I felt like hugging them all. I refrained because Sergeant Adams would have punched me if I tried to hug her. Instead, I bumped fists with Adams and handed her a cup of coffee. This is a coincidence, I observed. For you, sir, maybe, Adams replied, sitting down across from Giraud. My duty shift starts in an hour. Mine also, Sims said over a mouthful of coffee. I couldn't sleep, Chang said simply. Same here, I said. I sat down next to Desai and raised my cup for a toast. To the original merry band of pirates, especially those who didn't make it home. Coffee cups clinked together and we all drank. The cups didn't actually make a clinking sound as they were plastic, but they had the official UNEF logo on one side and UNS Flying Dutchman on the other. If by some total freaking miracle we ever returned to Earth, I could definitely see these plastic cups getting smuggled off the ship and becoming a much-prized collector's item. The six of us started catching up, because most of us didn't see much of each other between the time we left the Dutchman and the few days before departure from Earth orbit. None of us had time to talk much during those frantic days of loading and preparing the ship after the governments on Earth had finally made the forehead smackingly obvious decision to send the Dutchman back out. Every single survivor of the original merry band of pirates had volunteered to take the Dutchman back out again. After a lot of discussion, argument, and thinking, and a whole lot of politics among the governments involved, I had only accepted the five sitting with me in the galley. Although all the survivors volunteered to take the Dutchman back out, they didn't all need to come with us, and their governments were keen on having some of them remain on Earth for the knowledge they had. Many of the survivors had injuries. Giraud still had his arm encased in a Theranan healing sleeve, and Chang's ribs were still tender. Dr. Skippy's prognosis was for Giraud to have his arm out of the sleeve and fully healed in 2 more days. That was not soon enough for the French paratrooper, because he said his arm itched like 1,000 ants were biting him. Skippy said that was all in Giraud's head. This trip, I firmly believed, was a fool's errand, a suicide mission. The original merry band of pirates had pushed their luck to the limit already. To expect more from them was crazy. I'd been forced to argue using, let's say, strong language with Sergeant Adams, trying to persuade her not to come with us. She didn't have anything to prove, I told her. She had sacrificed enough. What I didn't say was that although we'd both been prisoners of the Kristang and scheduled to be executed, she had also been tortured. I'd seen her scars. Man, she laid into me for that, practically shouting that I was only saying that because she is a woman, that if she was a male Marine, I wouldn't pamper her. She was wrong about that. She also hadn't let me get a word in while she berated me. With all due respect, sir, you wear Colonel's Eagles, but we both know you're a buck sergeant. You need me. She had been right, 100%, and I was damned glad to have her. I was glad to have all of them, people I knew and trusted. Our new crew were all stars, to be sure. There were also people I didn't know. Before launch, I had deliberately avoided gathering just the six of us, as I didn't want the rest of the crew to think I favored my old comrades, although, of course, I did. There were other pilots aboard with vastly greater experience and qualifications than Captain Desai, pilots who had flown the hottest jets, test pilots, top guns. And not a single one of them were allowed to touch a single button of the Dutchman's controls unless they were under Desai's supervision. Any one of them might be able to be trusted to pilot an alien starship. Desai was trusted. Skippy felt the same way. Regardless of each pilot's official call sign before they came aboard the Flying Dutchman, Skippy began by calling all of them Fing, or fucking new guy, or girl. We had to explain to the new pilots that Skippy was actually being pretty nice, considering, you know, Skippy. One pilot, who I won't name, pissed Skippy off enough that his new assigned quarters were an airlock. That required me to intervene, although I could see Skippy's point. That pilot's new call sign instantly became Alligator for Airlock Guy. It's a pilot thing. What do you think of the new crew? I asked to no one in particular. Chang spoke first after diplomatically taking a pause to sip coffee. It will be an interesting exercise in international cooperation. Giraud nodded, then shrugged.
We will see.
70 people aboard the ship. 12 of them were scientists, civilians. Of those, 7 were women and 5 men. Their specialties covered everything from medicine and biology to physics. Competition for a berth aboard the Dutchman had been fierce among scientists, a bit less so after I explained that I did not realistically expect us to ever return. If it had been entirely up to me, we would have taken 0 scientists along. We didn't need scientists to achieve the mission objectives, and they would be only more people dead if we couldn't return to Earth. The number of people in our new merry band of pirates had not been my decision to make. Governments around the globe had insisted we bring scientists along. The original list had several thousand names on it. Limiting us to 12 scientists had been the best compromise I could get. My final criteria for who came with us and who stayed home was less about pure scientific ability and more about ability to get along with other people. What we did not need was a bunch of genius brainiacs, or as Skippy referred to them, slightly smarter monkeys, who had massive egos and became a pain in the ass during a long trip aboard the Dutchman. That was part of the reason we had more women scientists than men. Too many of the male candidates had failed UNEF's get-along-well-with-others psychological tests. International cooperation, I repeated the phrase slowly. Our original crew cooperated well, I pointed out. We had to, Chang said, and our mission then was to rescue Earth. We were all highly motivated.
Our crew back then was whoever was available right there, Giraud pointed out. I was only at the logistics base because my commander sent me to find out why supplies were so slow getting to us.
We sent what we had at the time, Sim said defensively.
Giraud nodded.
Yes, I realized that when I got there, Major. My point, Colonel, is our original crew had a sense of great purpose. We were thrown together, unexpectedly, to rescue our entire planet. Our new crew has no such sense of purpose.
And the Special Forces all think they are special, Adams remarked sourly over her coffee.
No offense, sir, she added to Giraud.
None taken, he laughed. Some of them intimidate me, he admitted.
And René Giraud had been an elite French paratrooper even before he went to paradise.
You too?
I asked.
They all intimidate me.
My concern is these rivalries may get out of hand. Rivalries not only between nationalities. I also had to worry about how U.S. Army Rangers and Navy SEALs would get along. Professionally, I hoped.
Adams bumped fists with Giraud across the table.
Don't worry, sir. We'll get them straightened out.
Chang had assigned the experienced Giraud and Adams to get on new Special Forces units squared away and to set up a training regimen. The new people had to learn about the Dutchman,
the flower, and dropships for basics. Then they would move on to familiarizing themselves with Krestang-powered armor and combats. What I was really worried about was our elite, gung-ho, intense special forces troops becoming bored. Before we departed Earth orbit, I had assembled the entire off-duty crew and scientists in an empty cargo bay. I explained once again that my sincere hope was for us to see zero combat action, that we would see nothing interesting along the way. A successful mission, in my opinion, would be for us to find Skippy's magic radio, drop him off somewhere, and for the Dutchman to return uneventfully to Earth. Or, in the all-too-likely scenario of the Dutchman breaking down somewhere after Skippy left us, of us being stuck in interstellar space with food running low and me having to engage our self-destruct. When I told the crew that unpleasant fact, I could see Special Forces nodding grimly. I also saw in their eyes they didn't fully believe it. They were trained for action, and action is what they expected. I hoped to disappoint them. Our new mission continued to use the UN Expeditionary Force command structure. The scientists came from many nations, but the military forces were drawn from only 5 countries: America, China, India, Britain, and France. Each country provided 9 Special Forces soldiers, except that America had only 4 Rangers and 4 SEALs because an American commanded the mission. Each country also provided 2 pilots. Giroux and Desai were in the Special Forces and pilot count. That left me, Chang, Sims, and Adams rounding out the 58 military personnel aboard. I drank the last of the coffee in my cup and got up for a refill. The coffee pot was almost empty. I drained the dregs into my cup and got the pot started on brewing more. There wasn't any breakfast available yet, other than do-it-yourself toast. Whose turn is it in the galley today? Details like that were Chang's decision as the executive officer. I should have known anyway. There was a duty roster somewhere, like on my Z-phone, that I was too lazy to look at. China, Chang replied. We'll get started in an hour or so. That's fine. I'm not hungry yet, I said. What was a Chinese breakfast like? I was eager to find out. Our crew was scientists, pilots, and special forces. We had no cooks, no mechanics, none of the usual support personnel. Each day, one nationality among the military forces would handle cooking in the galley, with the scientists making up a 6th team for cooking duties. The food situation was going to be interesting. Culinary skill had not been a prerequisite for assignment aboard the Flying Dutchman, although I knew we could count on the hyper-competitive special forces to do their best. With a fresh half cup of coffee, I headed toward the door. I'm going to hit the gym, I announced. Getting there early hopefully meant I would be working out by myself without being surrounded by spec ops people who were all in better condition than I was. Maybe I needed to be concerned about my own ego, too.